Is this the reading room?
Yes, I'm Saad Manzoor.
And I'm Travis Howard.
This is Reading Room Talk. Thank you for pressing play. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for coming, man.
Oh, man, we got an emergency podcast. So it's playoff season, NBA playoff season. And, you know, we're big basketball fans. And basically, like, the Milwaukee Bucks, their star player Giannis Antetokounmpo basically had a press conference after his team was eliminated. They were basically lost 4-1 to the Miami Heat. Big shout out Jimmy Butler. Bigger shout out to Kevin Love for helping injure Giannis. But otherwise, so after the game, you know, like the elimination game, Giannis, who's awesome with the media, goes and talks to the media and answers questions. And it's a very, very interesting exchange he had with one of the local reporters there. We're going to play it for you guys, and then we're going to talk about, you know, just mindset and, you know, steps to success, like Giannis says. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Here we go.
Oh, my God. Okay, because I'm not that up. You asked me the same question last year, Eric. Okay. Do you get a promotion every year on your job? No, right? So every year you work is a failure. Yes or no? No. Every year you work towards something, towards a goal, right? Which is to get a promotion, to be able to take care of your family, to be able, I don't know, provide the house for them or take care of your parents. You work towards a goal. It's not a failure. It's steps to success. You know, and if you've never, I don't want to make it personal. So there's always steps to it. You know, Michael Jordan played 15 years, won 6 championships. The other 9 years was a failure. That's what you're telling me. I'm asking you a question. Yes or no? Okay, exactly. So why are you asking me that question? It's a wrong question. There's no failure in sports. You know, there's good days, bad days. Some days you are able to be successful. Some days you're not. Some days it's your turn. Some days it's not your turn. And that's what sports is about. You don't always win. Some other people's going to win. And this year, somebody else is going to win. Simple as that. We're going to come back next year, try to be better, try to build good habits, try to play better, not have a 10-day stretch with playing bad basketball. You know, and hopefully we can win a championship. So 50 years from 1971 to 2021 that we didn't win a championship, it was 50 years of failures. No, it was not. It was steps to it, you know, and we were able to win one. Hopefully we can win another one. You know, sorry that I didn't want to make it personal.
Big shout out, Giannis.
Oh, yeah. He let him have it.
Big shout out. I mean, I think this was a great example, just mindset, you know. So this is basically in response to a question about whether his season was a failure.
Uh-huh.
The team was the number one seed, and they're expected to beat the Miami Heat. But, you know, like he said, they played 10 days of really bad basketball. It was pretty bad. I mean, they did not play very well. But also, he got injured. And also, the Miami Heat have an awesome team with awesome players. So I think it's important to talk about mindset here. You know, like, this is kind of a shout out to big shout out to Carol Dweck. So she's someone who wrote this book called Mindset. And, you know, she basically describes two sets of, like, thinking, like two mindsets. And her thought is basically, like, a mindset is like an established set of attitudes or outlooks or philosophies. And number one, there's a growth mindset. And the growth mindset is basically a belief that basic qualities can be cultivated through effort. And that's kind of what Giannis is getting at, where, like, you know, we're going to keep playing hard. We're going to keep building good habits. We're going to keep, you know, kind of controlling things we can control.
Mm-hmm.
The result necessarily we can't necessarily control. And, you know, I think an example for us, you know, going through medicine is that, you know, like, let's say you do more interventional procedures, you know, and you're going to get better. You might not be as good when you first start doing them, but you keep doing them, you're going to get better. And, you know, not all of them are going to go perfect, but you just keep doing them.
That's true. And, you know, it's that's a recurring theme. Mm-hmm. And all the folks that we interview,
mm-hmm.
they all encounter some obstacles, some quote unquote failure,
mm-hmm.
Some academic failure, but they didn't quit. And I think they had a growth mindset. Whether they were taught to have that or they naturally had it or they picked up on a pearl here or there,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you have to have a growth mindset in anything that you do. If you're a professional,
mm-hmm.
because you're going to encounter some some rough spots. So
yeah, because if not, you wouldn't have to go to medical school. You wouldn't need training. You wouldn't need any of this stuff. Like, you would just be born and have it. And that's kind of like the, you know, the other example is someone who has a fixed mindset. And the fixed mindset is a belief that you're born with unchangeable intelligence, skills, and abilities. And, you know, again, for these people, you know, they may be doing well. And then when it comes time when they have a difficult situation, you know, they feel like they're just not meant to be doing a certain type of procedure, not meant to be passing this test, or not meant to be, you know, going on to the next level. So they don't really necessarily focus on the work. They only focus on the result. And to me, you know, the reporter kind of had, you know, maybe a fixed mindset. I feel
for sure. Like, and external forces, external information, those things would lead you to have a fixed mindset rather than a growth. A growth mindset comes from within, and that fixed mindset comes from outside influences.
Exactly. And it's important to kind of recognize that, like, there's just different ways of, like, looking at situations. And I think that exchange was very interesting, because it's basically, you know, Giannis looking at it from, like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm an MBA. I'm making money. I have my, like, brother's MBA. Like, I've changed my whole family's direction with generational wealth. Like, I'm, like, famous. I can do, like, all the dreams I've had. And then, as opposed to, like, the writer who's basically saying, you know, you're the number one seed, so you failed.
This guy playing basketball makes millions of dollars. I don't really see any failure in that.
Exactly. So, and you know, and Giannis probably hot from, like, losing. They had just lost, like, you know, 10 minutes ago. So yeah. It's just a really interesting, you know, way to kind of look at things. And I think another thing, I feel like Giannis kind of plays the way you have to be successful. He's not necessarily the most talented person. He's definitely very athletic. He's definitely, you know, very tall. And
dude works hard, man.
Yeah, but he works hard. Like, he kind of explains like why he plays the way he does. He's just very focused on, like, the effort he put in. And, like, I think he, like, you know, I think he ended up missing like 13 free throws or something in the game. And everyone was, like, clowning him for that. But I thought it was impressive that he just kept going up there and missing free throws.
Yeah.
Like, he just kept going.
And yeah, man. He didn't
quit. Yeah. I mean, at one point he did throw the ball out of bounds or try to, but otherwise, I mean, he still was like, you know, if we lose, I'm going to be trying. And he was out there trying. So I think it's super important to kind of, like, notice and kind of, you know, just examine that interaction. It's very, very telling, especially, like, in medicine, where, like, you know, people are telling you can't make it, or people are telling you that, you know, it's just not meant to be for you. Mm-hmm. There's just many, many different paths to get there, you know. So
a failed test, a poor grade in a class, mm-hmm. A bad evaluation on a rotation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that everyone has experienced some amount of disappointment, you know, where you didn't achieve to a level that you thought you wanted to, and then other people as well wanted you to achieve at a higher level. And all those things can just really, you know, you can take a hit to your self-esteem.
You really can.
And, you know, which can tap into, like, imposter syndrome, you know, where people feel like, you know, they're not supposed to be there, or they're not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk a little bit about that. So.
Yeah, so imposter syndrome, or the imposter phenomenon, basically, we have a little bit of history on this. So basically, it's basically feeling anxious about being exposed as a fraud and not experiencing success internally, despite being high performing at external objective measures. And this was first actually described in women by Dr. Suzanne Amos and Pauline Rose Clance. And basically, they were just talking about how, like, there were some high achieving women who would, like, make it, you know, in the, you know, 70s, 80s, and then just feel like they just weren't meant to be there, which is, you know, that's not good, because you put in all this work. It wasn't an accident that you made it there. You weren't just, you know, given this, you know, situation. And a lot of the related factors are kind of related to high familial expectations, overprotective parents, guardians, graduate level coursework, racial identities, which we're going to talk about, attribution styles, which means, like, how you describe things that happen to you, anxiety, depression, low trait self-esteem, perfectionism, and excessive self-monitoring. So the way that they kind of described it in their original paper was that, you know, you have to have two of the six characteristics, and the six characteristics are the imposter cycle, need to be special or the best, fear of failure, denial of ability and discounting praise, feeling fear or guilt about success. So basically, if you have two of these, they kind of would say that you probably have this imposter, you know, phenomenon or syndrome. And obviously, you know, we've talked about this with a couple of our guests.
For sure.
Really important to, you know, kind of recognize where, like, you're basically just making it to med school is like you're like very, very high achieving. Or for some people, just making it to college, you know, that's a very big, you know, deal, you know.
For sure. Making it to 30 and alive.
Exactly.
I mean, some people who, let's be real, I mean, it's a struggle to stay alive and survive in some settings and in some of our communities. So, yeah, I mean, I think we've all kind of gone through some amount of imposter syndrome, or should I say, some, whether it be temporary or not, you know. One thing that kind of like, you know, denial of praise. How often it's like that weird feeling you get when someone tells you, you did a really nice job, you did great, you know, this and that. Man, I'm the first one to be like, oh, thank you. You know, I just, you know, you deflect it. Oh, it's my team. Or,
yeah.
You know, it's the people around me, or, you know, it feels uncomfortable like to get praise for something you did well. And,
exactly.
Oh, man, I think a lot of us go through that.
Absolutely. That kind of comes back to the mindset, you know, like if you feel like you weren't supposed to be there, then you always feel like someone was giving this to you.
Right.
And you're kind of denying the work that you're putting in to like make it to that like level of, you know, being able to accept praise for doing like high level work. And, you know, you just got to be able to like have that growth mindset. It's just super important because it's going to kind of, you know, basically talk about this other thing that we're going to talk about, which is framing. And framing is basically the cognitive bias where an individual's choice from a set of options is influenced more by presentation than the substance of the pertinent information. And this was first described by Dr. Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky. And basically, an example basically is like, you know, let's say that, you know, they're asking you to take call at a hospital. And at the first hospital, you're told that your radiology correct reading rate is 95%. So you're like, I want to go to that hospital, as opposed to a different hospital where you're told that your radiology miss rate is 5%. It's the same thing.
Right.
But you're like, you'd rather go to this other hospital because they've kind of framed it in a way where like you're just not that good. You know, so like I think it's really important to like kind of have like the proper framing, and like that's kind of a skill that you have to cultivate too, because you know, when you do get praise or when you do you know, do something that is, you know, worth mentioning, it's important to recognize like your, you know, effort in making that happen for yourself.
It's so true, man. And you know, like you can be on call, and it goes back to those discussions we have with folks that are on overnight call and they're tired and they're so exhausted, and you wake up the next day and then you like you perseverate over missing one report. You don't think about the hundreds of reports that you did that were helpful to clinicians, and you know, it's a trauma or it's in the ED and you're directing surgeons on when to operate and not to operate. You don't think about all those good calls you made. You don't sleep over missing the tiny apical pneumothorax that, you know, no, it doesn't mean anything.
And, yep.
that's exactly like right. Framing 101. And you learn to do that if you're lucky.
Yeah. And you learn to do that through mentors. A lot of exactly. times mentors, those would be the people that kind of frame it correctly for you. You know, sometimes the people who you're, you know, you might be, you know, doing the work with, you know, they're not going to necessarily be able to frame it as well because they're kind of going through the same stressful, you know, situation. You know, like the attending who like you're reading out with in the morning, he's going to be more stressed about, or she's going to be more stressed about what you've missed.
Right.
So they're always going to frame it in a way that like makes you feel like you didn't do very well, even though that, you know, of the 100 studies you read, like 95 of them, you did, you know, produce a correct diagnosis. But the 5%, they're going to be worried about the ones that you did not do well. And that kind of goes back to, you know, this process of utility theory, which means that it's basically a decision making model that's it's a decision making model of perfectly rational agents. So people who are like making a decision basically based on facts only. And, you know, we just don't live in that type of world where you can just make decisions on facts only. Like, a lot of times, you know, our decision making is based on prospect theory, which is it's more influenced by the possibility of loss than the prospect of equivalent gain. Mm-hmm. So again, the attending comes in the morning, they're anxious because they know you're a second year, third year resident, and they don't know what you missed or may have not missed, but they're gonna have to sign the report. So if you miss a pneumo or if you miss like an appy or something, they're gonna feel more stressed about that part. And then whenever you go through a case and like you made a correct diagnosis of a renal stone, they're gonna let that go. That's just like whatever. So it's your kind of job to kind of realize that, you know, you did do a good job. You did make all these diagnoses that you're correct. Unfortunately, it's just been framed in a way where, you know, they're going to have to be responsible for the ones that you did miss. And that's kind of stressful from their standpoint, too, which is, you know, important to kind of have that perspective as well when you're going through training.
But don't spiral, you know, have the growth mindset. You know, use that experience to empower you. So that you grow and so that you're better the next go around.
Exactly. Because if that wasn't the case, then, you know, you would go to, you know, you'd be a doctor right after high school. There'd be no training.
No training. I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. So that kind of goes into like our next topic, which is called locus of control. So basically that means it's the degree to which people believe that they, as opposed to external factors, have control over the outcomes of their events in their lives. And this was described by the same doctors, Kahneman and Tversky. And basically, there's two different loci, I guess, two different locus of controls you can describe. So the first one is the internal locus, which means that it's the belief that one can control one's own life. So, for example, you get a grade on a test and you either blame or praise yourself for the results. Mm. Like it was your, like that's what you did. You either got a good grade because you studied or you got a bad grade because you didn't study or studied the wrong things. But it's important to have that internal locus as opposed to an external locus, which I feel like a lot of people in our community kind of suffer from, where you feel like the belief, it's basically the belief that life is controlled by outside factors.
That's true.
You know, like a person, basically factors you can't influence, or they're controlled by chance or fate. But, you know, someone in that standpoint, you know, they'd get a bad grade and then start blaming the teacher or like the textbook or, you know, something else, basically. So it's easy to do that. But then the unfortunate part is that you're not going to be able to, like, you know, have the proper mindset to like do better.
Yeah, man, let's talk about that, because this external locus and feeling like you are, there are factors working against you. You know, we know and we feel that that is true.
It is.
But you have to overcome that. And yeah. I think that's, you know, that's an unspoken. I think when I think about that, I think about how much pride, say, my mom or my dad might have, or, you know, some of the folks in our community might have when they see us make it to become a medical doctor or overcome some of those obstacles, because external factors are real, but, you know, it's a huge feat if you're able to overcome those factors and still succeed. Mm-hmm. And so having that internal locus intact will help you overcome those external factors.
It does. And that kind of goes with that growth mindset again, where like you feel like I have control over certain things. And part of that is, you know, being able to, you know, study for this test and like do test questions and talk to other people about how to prepare for this exam. You know, these are, you know, this is you taking control of, you know, your fate, basically, which is really important. And then also, even in the time that you do feel like you failed, to also take control of that and know that, you know, you can still succeed, even though you may be in a current state of, you know, quote unquote failure, I guess.
It's so true, man. And, you know, I think also what helps you do that is knowing the folks that did it before you.
Yes.
And knowing your history and knowing yourself. Yes. And knowing that you're standing on the shoulders of so many people who struggled to make the path for you. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's lacking in our, I think, in our education system, especially as an African-American male. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know the details that I know about Dr. Mae Jemison until, you know, my late 30s or even 40s.
Yes, please talk about it.
You know, she's not only the first African-American woman to go into space, she's also a physician. And she practiced in Africa and practiced in Sierra Leone, practiced in Liberia for 2 years. This woman has committed herself to helping people, you know, and a chemical engineer. Here I am, an engineer and a physician and a Black man. And I had to teach myself about all the details of Mae Jemison. And, you know, I would love to have been in the, our ancestors are here, the people who have done it, who carved the way they've done it. And it's just, if you know that, it's easier to be inspired, by those that have done it and and keep those internal locus and external locus, keep everything in check and know that you can do it. So,
yeah.
And it puts saying that, you know, Dr. Naeem Akbar, East American psychologist, he always stressed for us to know yourself, you know, that goes back to ancient times, you know, know thyself so that you can, and that includes your ancestors so that they can motivate you to go forward. So I definitely want to big shout out to Dr. Mae Jemison, and, you know,
that's big time.
That's big time. And that's a huge source of encouragement and motivation. So,
yeah, these stories really do kind of frame things in the proper, you know, way, you know, like just kind of knowing that, like, you know, we know her just from, like, you know, little children's books and stuff. Right. Like, oh, this is the first, you know, African woman in space. But when you actually go and actually do look at the history, you kind of get like a more broad, you know, story, which is important. It's not like she was just, you know, it's almost framed where like she was chosen to be the first.
Right.
Like, but she, no, she earned it. Like
she
actually went out there and like made it happen for herself.
But yeah. Born in 1956. This
yeah.
This is before the civil rights movement in Alabama.
Yeah.
Then she goes to Stanford and Cornell and just kills the game, man. Like, and I feel like she should be celebrated and talked about much more than she is. So when, you know, we talk about these concepts that even as a professional and someone who's made it through that we struggle with, you know, on a day to day, you know, you just have to have these folks in your, you know these folks, know these people, know these ancestors and realize that you're not alone.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like, you know, we didn't have the podcast at that time, but we would have had her on and had her talk about her whole story. And that's the whole point of kind of doing this thing is, you know, people aren't being chosen to, like, you know, kind of make it. Like, you're going to actually have to go out there and earn it and, you know, get noticed that way, which is kind of why we like doing this, because we can actually talk to people and kind of talk about their whole entire story and not just, you know, one line or two line thing about what they did. You know, like, this is it's a lot of work. These are like life achievements, you know, even, you know, making it to med school, making it to like grad school, making it to like law school. Like, these are like life achievements for some people, you know. So and they should be celebrated. They should be, you know, acknowledged. And you know, the whole story should be told, not just the story that, you know, can fit inside like a book or something, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, man. I think I think it's super important to just kind of, you know, just have like a whole story on these people. These people are amazing. So you don't have to wait for the movies to come out. Like, we can do the research.
Do the digging on your own. You'll be inspired, that's for sure.
Exactly. And you know, part of like what, you know, people who do make it, you know, have is, you know, we've talked about survivor's remorse. And it's basically just the belief that one has done something wrong by surviving, you know, a traumatic or tragic event when others did not. And this was first described by Dr. Stephen Joseph, studying basically a boat capsizing where like a lot of people died and some people did not die. And basically he was just talking about how like there were three types of survivor's remorse. And the first type is that, you know, some people who survived had a guilt about staying alive while others died. Another group kind of had guilt about being things that they failed to do to help others. And then they would basically have like these post-traumatic intrusions, basically, or like, you know, stress disorders that would come occasionally. And a third type was guilt over things that they did to save themselves, whether it's like, you know, saving, you know, I think like he kind of described like pushing people away or like kind of taking like a life vest for somebody. Like, these are very important things. And I think like in our community, it kind of, you know, kind of talks about, you know, like, you know, sometimes you're going to have to do well in school. Like, and that's okay. Like,
right.
You're going to have to do well in school and you might get made fun of and you might do better on a test than someone else. And that kind of drives that person to like, not, you know, work as hard after that. But, you know, you do have to be able to like kind of inspire with, you know, what you do and how you do it.
Check this out. You know, like the whole movie Creed 3, if you haven't checked it out,
shout out
Michael B. Jordan. You know, it's all about survivor's remorse. And on full disclosure, I haven't seen the movie, but I watched the preview and he's like, you know, his friend is his friend, like a family member, goes to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out and he makes it and Michael B. Jordan makes it and he's his famous boxer and achieved so much. He's moving, he's trying to maneuver around guilt from surviving, you know, and, you know, survivor's remorse is a real thing once you get some measure of success.
Exactly, exactly. And depending on what community you come from, you know, like sometimes it's celebrated, sometimes your success is not celebrated, right. Which is tough. It's very tough, actually.
It's alienating. It can be very alienating.
Yeah, because you're basically in a world where you feel like you don't belong being successful, but then when you go back to the world that you came from, you're being told that, you know, you're making, you know, making feel like you're guilty, basically, for making it. So it's tough, and it's something you have to deal with day to day. You know, it's not just like something that happens once in a while, you know. So it's real. I think it's really, really important to kind of acknowledge these things. And again, that's the kind of talks about the importance of mentorship, you know, like someone who you're consider a mentor is someone who's probably went through the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
They're just a little bit, you know, farther down the road. So it's important to kind of communicate and talk to these people about not just the process of making it, but like the process of mentally staying there in that, you know, state of success, you know.
Right. And dealing with the guilt, especially when you have loved ones that are maybe not doing as well. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's, I remember reading an article once that talked about how young African-American physicians who make it actually still have a lower income or a lower net worth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because you get to a point where, first of all, you have, you know, tons of loans that you're paying back. And then you're trying to bring everybody up around you.
Mm-hmm.
The money is going out, and you only make a fixed amount. So, I would venture to say that a lot of that paying out is fed by survivor's remorse.
Absolutely.
And feelings of guilt and feeling like everybody around you has to come up because you made it. And, you know, I think there's a sweet spot that everybody can find. But I do believe that community is very important.
It is.
And I think if you can help strengthen your community, it's not always with money. Mm-hmm. It's not always with dishing out. It's, you know, your time and your effort and just trying to mentor and be there for people. Don't ever discount that as much as some people might want you to discount it. You know, it's like supporting community and being there for your loved ones is not always in the form of cash. You know, matter of fact, that old proverb, you know, you teach a man to fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that'll be much more beneficial. So,
yep. No, that's exactly right. Because, you know, a lot of times the people with that mentality that they feel like you owe them, those right, are people that right. are not going to go out there and like make it happen for themselves.
You know,
like it's just kind of is like a similar mentality. Like if you felt, you know, like the people who, you know, who are probably going to be able to make it, sometimes going to be the people who have the mentality that they can make it. And it's, you know, they don't have like a fixed mindset where they feel like someone else is holding them down and it's not like the successful person, mm-hmm. you know? So, you know, you'll be able to find these people. These people are going to be the ones that actually want the information.
That's true.
And the people who are probably not going to make it sometimes are going to be the ones that just want the money.
And we have to figure out a way to encourage and be there for all those folks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that self-motivation, you know, it's hard, it's difficult. You know, it's a difficult thing to want better for folks and to want to help. And it may not be their time. May not be that time. Might not be the perfect time. But we don't give up.
No, we don't give up. And that's why, again, why we do this. You know, we want to make sure that people know that people who have made it have had difficult times.
That's
they
right.
Come from similar situations that, you know, people who feel like they can't make it feel, you know, don't make it, you know, so it's not impossible.
Yeah.
And you just got to put in the work. You got to have the proper mindset. And of course, there's going to be a little bit of luck involved. But, you know, that luck isn't going to like work out for people who aren't necessarily, you know, trying to, you know, put in the work as well. So, you know, it's a very tough and delicate balance. And like you said, like, yeah, like that adage about the income is very, very true. I remember, you know, like, and you'll go through it when you're going through training, you know, you'll talk to people who are like, oh yeah, you know, my loans are all paid off. You know, my parents paid for my school, or like, I got it from a trust fund, or, you know, like, people are just starting from different starting points.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's not necessarily like a race thing. It's, you know, could be socioeconomic status. Sometimes it could be just, you know, mentally people just aren't able to make it. You know, we've talked about, you know, people who like start med school and get their first like average grade and lose their mind.
Right.
So it's there's a lot of factors involved. And
respect for those starting points, for those different starting points. You know, we have to be sensitive to that. You know, I think a lot of people, especially in academics, and you know, there's a lot of comparing, and a lot of it doesn't serve us. You know, and
no.
you're ranked, you know, you're ranked in the class, which is the ultimate comparison. You know, everything is about how you measure up to the next person, and it can be very easy to lose your way in that setting.
So
we have to resist that. And with social media, you know, you get to a point where you start making money, but then, you know, you still feel like you don't make enough.
Yeah. And that's framing. Like,
right.
You're framing in incorrect way, basically. Like, you're comparing yourself to people's best selves.
You know,
people aren't going to put like their actual selves on, like, you know, social media like that. So it is important to kind of realize that, you know, this is not real. This is TV. It's like entertainment.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you can't, you know, like, we didn't compare ourselves to, like, you know, like, whoever, like on TV, like when we were growing up, to like, I don't know, Donald Duck's uncle, you know, like, that's not a, McScrooge, you can't, like, that's not realistic. Like, it's just not realistic. So again, I think that kind of talks about the importance of just having mentorship, community, like just being in like a real life with real people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just totally, it's second to none. You really do have to have that proper perspective. And like, I think, you know, framing again is super important. Like, you have to have a realistic framework about what you're doing and how you've made it and how you're going to continue to make it.
Yeah. It, you know, each one of these topics that you've discussed or we've discussed, we could spend so much time on each and every one of them.
That's right.
Like, from mindset to framing to locus of control, to imposter syndrome, survivor's remorse. I mean, you know, we could spend a lot of time on them and then bring on some other guests and just dive in, you know?
Yeah, no, you really can. So it's a lot, man. But we'll talk about this last thing real quick. Some of my favorite concepts is called satisficing. And satisficing basically means, it's basically satisfy plus suffice equals satisfice. It's basically searching through an available alternative until an acceptability threshold is met. And this was first described by Dr. Herbert Simon, who got the Nobel Prize for this, actually. And the whole point is that things aren't going to be perfect.
No.
And you can't look for the perfect, solution. And sometimes taking the time to, like, taking too much time to, like, look for a perfect solution is basically robbing you of opportunities. And basically, he kind of describes, you know, the rational choice in complicated world is unrealistic. So, like, the example I always have in my mind is that, like, you trust your search pattern when you're, like, looking through, like, a radiology study. You trust your search pattern, then you dictate the exam. As opposed to a maximizer, which is kind of the opposite of satisficing, is like someone who is reading and reading studies repetitively, like researching, doing all this research, and then, you know, just taking a lot of time to like dictate an exam where like it's not going to be perfect. You're going to have to kind of decide what your you know, threshold is going to be and just kind of trust it. Mm-hmm. You know, just you know, there's basically two ways. Like, I think the, you know, kind of describes the world as being too complicated for perfect solutions. So basically, you can either make a decision based on, you know, making optimum solutions for a simplified world or making satisfactory solutions for a more realistic world. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to be perfect.
No
good idea is going to be accepted by everybody, you know? So you kind of do have to have confidence and can go back to that growth mindset. It's not going to be perfect. But your journey is your journey and you're going to have to make decisions.
That's true, man. And I think one thing to point out of, you know, having experienced a few things is solutions, they evolve. You know, what you might think is just a satisfactory solution today may evolve beautiful and much more potent. And I think that speaks to, like, you know, what works for now and trusting the process.
You know, absolutely.
If you think that, oh, I had to retake a course, so I look like a failure, you know, that's what you had to do today. But when you're done and the finished product is, and you graduated, do you really care that you had to repeat a course?
Yeah, does not matter. You know?
So it's like that satisfactory solution,
yeah,
can evolve into something beautiful if you allow it.
So. Yeah, because like the thing is, you just don't want to lose the time.
Right.
You know, you lose the time trying to maximize everything. You know, it's just not going to work out. You know, like I remember, you know, going through, you know, when I was in, you know, applying for med school, like people would be like just retaking the MCAT until they got like the perfect score. But then like you're losing years of, like, you know, potentially making it in med school. You're not even giving yourself a chance to apply.
That's true. And there are so many other things that make you a strong applicant. There's so many other things in life to pay attention to. Like, you know, some things just have to be a solution in that time so you can get on to the other things in life that make you a complete person.
Exactly.
Whether that is socializing or whether that is spending time with family, you know, sometimes you have to settle for what you might think is the less perfect solution, but it really helps you overall get to your end goal.
And it's not settling, it's satisficing.
There you go. Satisficing.
Man, I love it. It's these are important concepts, man. So I think like a lot of successful people kind of have these concepts already, like, you know, built into them, but these are all learned, you know, cultivatable things, I guess, you know. Like you can do this. Like, this is just because of the way you think, it can change. You know, like, it really can change. And that's important to kind of realize as well. Like, what you feel and what you think can change.
And I venture to say it should.
Yeah, no, it should.
I mean, as you grow and as you become more mature, you should, your mindset, it should change.
It should change. Yeah, that's part of evolution. Exactly. That's definitely part of evolution. And part of evolution is just having more experiences. Again, back to the MCAT thing, if you're just retaking the MCAT over and over, you could have been doing research and you could have met somebody.
Right.
And then that person could have, like, made a phone call for you. And, you know, like, it's just, like, there's just a whole, you know, it's just, like, a whole time thing that you've kind of, you know, bypassed, basically focusing on, like, this certain thing for, like, so long, you know. Like, you just kind of go with the flow.
Man, and another one, you know, it's another thing we throw around. You just keep it moving. You know, we say that. That's in key. That, everything about, you know, satisfying, like, Let's keep it moving, bro.
Yeah, that's man. Keep it moving, man. Don't be like the, what's that, the Chappelle Show skit where they keeping the real goes wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Just let it go. They made a phone. They called you by accident. Just let it go. Yeah, yeah, man. But no, this is awesome, man. I love talking about these type of topics because it's something that we just don't talk about. Like,
We don't, and we need to, because, you know, being vulnerable, being open, being honest about these things that everybody struggles with.
Mm-hmm. Even Giannis.
Yes, right. Back to Giannis. You know, if you're kind to yourself, be kind to other people, man. This world, we can make some make some impact.
Absolutely. It'll work out. It'll work out. You just got to just keep it moving, like you said. Absolutely, man. But again, exactly. And with that being said, thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. We'll be back soon with another one. Thank you guys so much. And you know how to do. Stay low and keep firing.
Please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or wherever you get your pods.